Welcome to the Canadian Nutrition Society podcast, Nutrition Conversations, a podcast dedicated to exploring the latest research in nutrition and health in Canada. In each episode, we invite expert guests to share their insight and knowledge on a wide range of topics, from dietary patterns to sports nutrition, food insecurity, and food sustainability. Whether you're looking to improve your own health and wellness, or simply stay up to date on the latest developments in the field of nutrition, we hope you'll join us on this journey to better understand the role food plays in our lives. Please note that the views expressed by speakers in CNS podcasts are those of the speaker and not necessarily of CNS. Sitting in the host chair in this episode is the Scientific Director of the Canadian Nutrition Society, Dr. Sharon Panahi, who will be talking to Dr. Sharon Strauss on Season 2, Episode 5 of Nutrition Conversations on the art and science behind effective mentorship, exploring strategies, challenges, and enduring rewards that define this practice. This podcast is supported by the CIHR-INMD Training and Community Support Grant.
Hello, Nutrition Conversations listeners. Mentorship, often described as the art of guiding and nurturing, holds a special place in the fabric of human development. From ancient traditions of apprenticeship to modern-day corporate mentorship programs, the practice has evolved, yet its essence remains unchanged. The passing down of wisdom, experience, and support from one generation to the next. Joining us on this episode is Dr. Sharon Strauss, a geriatrician and clinical epidemiologist who trained at the University of Toronto and the University of Oxford. She's the director of the Knowledge Translation Program and physician-in-chief at St. Michael's Hospital and professor in the Department of Medicine at the University of Toronto. She holds a Tier 1 Canada Research Chair in Knowledge Translation and Quality of Care and has authored more than 600 peer-reviewed publications and 3 textbooks in evidence-based medicine, knowledge translation, and mentorship. Since 2015, she has consistently been in the top 1% of highly cited clinical researchers as per Web of Science and has an outstanding H-index of 126. She has received national awards for mentorship, research, and education, and was named to the Order of Canada in 2021. It is with great pleasure that I welcome you, Dr. Strauss, to episode 5 of season 2 of Nutrition Conversations.
Thanks so much, Sharon. It's great to be here, and I look forward to our conversation.
I'm really honored to have you here with us today to talk about this topic, as it's a very dear topic to my heart. In every journey we know, whether personal or professional, having a guiding hand can make all the difference. And so in science, we typically look at grants and publications as measures of impact. However, I think one of the greatest privileges of being an academic and even in a lot of non-academic positions is to be a mentor. And that can have a profound impact on how we shape the paths of others. So maybe I'll start off with our first question. Why is mentorship important and what role has that played for you?
So great question. And I really like that you started off thinking about, what a privilege it is to be a mentor and the importance of that role. I think that being a mentor is one of the most important things that we can do for a number of reasons. One is because I always believe that our legacy that we have is our impact on others. And that means, as a mentor, being able to work with mentees and help them with their career development, and not just their career development, but their holistic personal development. And so to me, being a good mentor is about being able to provide all of that for the mentees. And in particular, it's thinking about what is the dream that the mentee has. And a good mentor should facilitate the realization of that dream. It's not what the mentor thinks they should be doing or shouldn't be doing. It's really what the mentee wants to do. And I think a good mentor supports them in that. And the mentor shouldn't be the one directing, but should be prompting them with the questions to consider, and to consider what they need to think about when they're creating their vision, when they're thinking about what it is that they want to do and how they operationalize it. The mentor should be prompting and nudging with the questions and then providing the support needed to be able to fulfill the vision. but shouldn't be the one saying, this is what your vision is and this is how you're going to do it. So I think a good mentor really does all of those things and functions as a role model, as a sponsor, as a coach, and taking that holistic lens so that it's not just a single aspect of the individual mentee, but it's their whole entire person. So everything from, you know, the career to their personal life, to the integration of career and personal life. And to me, a good mentor should do all of those things.
And so what sort of role has that played for you in terms of your experiences? Yeah.
So I was very fortunate in my career that I had a very fantastic mentor. And it wasn't until I finished my clinical training, I think a lot of us who do clinical training and do some graduate training, we're told to go away to another institution for a little while and learn something different, get new experiences. And I reached out to somebody that I had never met, but who had just moved actually from Canada to Oxford to set up a new center in evidence-based medicine. And he had kind of written the foundational textbooks on clinical epidemiology and done probably more randomized trials than many others in the world at that time. And I reached out to him and asked him if he was open to taking on fellows, and emailed him. And within like a few minutes, he responded and said, sure, come on over. And it was really interesting because I learned that was really his style. It was Dave Sackett, who initially was at McMaster, was one of the initial people responsible for setting up their medical school and also their clinepi department. And he had moved then to Oxford to set up this new center. And so I went and thinking, well, I'll go for maybe a year and see how it goes and see if I want to do this kind of thing or not. Because I wasn't sure at that point if I even wanted an academic career. It was interesting to me, but I hadn't really fallen in love with it yet. And the first time I met him, he and his wife, Barbara, who is also an amazing mentor for me, took me out for dinner to a pub that, if anybody's been to Oxford on the podcast, you'll probably have been to this pub called The Trout. It's known as the Morse Pub as well. So, because Colin Dexter, who wrote all the Inspector Morse novels, used to hang out there. And so they took me for dinner there and sat me down. Dave asked me, what did I want to do in my career and what did I want to do in my life? And so I told him, and his immediate response was, my job is to help you achieve that. And I will do whatever I can to help you achieve your goals. And I don't know if you've ever had anybody say that to you, or if anybody on this podcast, in the podcast audience has ever had that said to them, but I had never heard that before. And my first thought was, I didn't believe him, because I thought, you know, how can somebody be that altruistic? I finished all my clinical training and I started my graduate training. It was the first time I'd ever heard anybody say anything like that. And I quickly found out that he didn't just say it, he lived it. And I ended up staying almost 4 years. And one of the things that I learned over that period of time is not just about research and career development and things like that, but I saw what a good mentor was in action. And the only thing that Dave ever asked me in the entire time that, you know, that we worked together was, he said, I ask that you do the same thing for others. And you know, he could have asked me to do, you know, scutty things over time, and he never did. He said, I want you to do the same thing for others. And that's actually what triggered my interest in mentorship then, because it made me think, well, what made him such a good mentor? And, you know, and how did it take me so long to find somebody like that? And how do I become, you know, a mentor? And how do I provide even a little bit of what he was able to do?
Yeah, I think you've had quite a good experience. And I guess my understanding is that you were sort of the one that reached out and, was able to find that good mentor. So for someone searching for that, how does one go about finding a mentor, or how does one approach establishing that mentor-mentee relationship? I know, you had sort of your approach, but if you were to give us some advice on how someone can approach that, what would you say?
No, it's a great question. And I think, you know, it can be hard to find a mentor. Like, you know, as I said, like, you know, and you're right, like you end up sometimes reaching out to people, right? And cold calling them or cold emailing them and asking them. I think that's one of the things that I think those of us who are in leadership positions, I think we have a responsibility, not just to be mentors, but to support the development of mentorship programs where people can know they can go to for help finding mentors. And I think that's something that's really important, that more and more we're seeing mentorship programs getting developed, like the one that your organization has developed, where people know they can go there and find potential mentors. And to me, that's really, really important. One of the things, though, is if it's not available, then it's thinking about, who are the people out there who I really, you know, I see their careers as a career maybe that I would be interested in. I see the work that they've done, that they're doing, and I think that's actually maybe something that I would want to do. And so kind of doing some of that work to find out who are those individuals and then reaching out to them and asking them. And I think I often, when I talk to kind of junior academics or graduate students and fellows, that's one of the most challenging things because, you know, people are worried about, you know, reaching out to somebody who's, you know, more senior, more established in their career. Because it is going to take courage to do that. But I always say to them, what's the worst thing that could happen? You know, they say no, they ignore the email. You know, those are the worst things that could happen. And so then you move on. And if that's the case, those are people you would not want to have as your mentor. So I think it's important to think about who are those people that are out there. Maybe it's, you know, sometimes people find mentors organically. Like if you work with somebody clinically and you see, you know, maybe that's somebody I want to work with or from a research perspective, and that's great. But sometimes you don't have that exposure. And so it's figuring out then how else can I find that? And sometimes it's through established programs. Sometimes it's through looking at other people's careers. Sometimes it's just talking to people to find out, you know, who's out there and who might be a good mentor or not. And then one of the other things too, is thinking about opportunities for networking. And I think those are venues for identifying potential mentors, like, you know, being involved with a national society or organization or an international society or organization, because your mentor doesn't have to be in the same place as you are. So it's looking for all of those different opportunities as potential ways to find mentors.
Right. No, and I think, yeah, you bring up an important point. And I'm also thinking as you're speaking about the type of mentor, because oftentimes we look for people that are kind of like ourselves. So, you know, I think of, does this mentor have to be like me? Or what are the expectations that people should really have from a mentor? Are you looking for someone that's similar to you? I mean, we're looking for sort of perspective and, you know, some guidance. So what are you supposed to look for?
And it's interesting because everybody's going to have different things that they're going to be looking for. And I think it's important that you find somebody that where there's going to be mutual respect and, you know, and shared values, that, you know, that you're going to be able to have that safe space to have that conversation with them. And I think one of the things that we can think about is, you know, do you want to have it matched on gender or race or, you know, career interests and things like that? There's no right answer. There's no single answer. It really is, what does that individual feel they need and would find helpful. I think it's important. You know, I've always found it helpful to make sure there's that mutual respect and that safe space where you can have those open, honest conversations. And when I meet with a potential mentee, or when I, you know, when I was meeting with a mentor, I always wanted to make sure that, you know, that I felt that connection. And you know, sometimes in the literature, you know, we talk about having that chemistry with that individual, where you do feel that connection, that you can have those conversations with them. And that it's a safe space where, you know, when I worked with Dave and I was a mentee, I knew that it was a safe space. I knew that he always had my back. And I also knew he was going to ask me the tough questions, that he wasn't going to, say, oh yeah, that's a great idea, and you know, and let me go on my way. He was always going to ask me those tough questions and give me constructive feedback. Because that's the thing, we want somebody who's going to pose those tough questions and make us think about things instead of just saying, oh yeah, great job, and going on. So I do think it's important to make sure that when we look for that relationship, that we find somebody like that who's going to be able to give us those different things. And it also highlights too that, you know, sometimes we need more than one mentor. You might need somebody, you know, like I often say, as a, you know, I'm a clinician researcher. I'm not a great mentor for a clinician teacher, for example, who, you know, that's a very different job description from my job description. And I can, you know, talk to them about different things in their career, but I, you know, we have very different pathways. And so I would encourage them also that I could be a mentor, but that they should also have somebody who is a clinician teacher, for example, who's, you know, very senior as a clinician teacher, who can bring in different aspects about their career, thinking about, you know, job opportunities that are more education focused. So I think it's important to think about that when we're trying to find mentors, is what is it that we really need and want?
Right. And I mean, oftentimes we are looking for a good connection, but how do you handle situations where there's a disconnect between a mentor and mentee's expectations and goals? Like, what do you sort of do there?
You know, I often talk about that. I mean, this is a relationship, and any kind of relationships, they go through ups and downs, right? So I think it's important to figure out, first of all, is there a communication breakdown or what's going on, and trying to understand if it's a remediable issue or not. Because sometimes it may not. And so sometimes you may have to break up with your mentor. And I think that's fine. And we also go through times, you know, as our careers develop, you know, our mentorship needs change over time as well. You know, like if you think about your job that you had when you first started out, you know, compared to 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, 15 years down the line, you know, many of us in our jobs, we change our jobs. And so then our need for mentorship and the types of mentors that we have might change. So that's one piece that sometimes comes up. But then the second piece that you referred to is that, for sure, sometimes, you know, there might be issues that come up between the mentor and mentee. And if you can't work through those, and if you find that there's just a communication breakdown, then sometimes you do have to, you know, separate, you know, break up with your mentor and find somebody else. And that's okay. Like, I think that's okay to do that. Cause you want to make sure that if there is, you know, a breakdown that, you know, and if it just can't be addressed, there's no point in trying to kind of push ahead on that. So sometimes, you know, it does require, like, in our mentorship program in our department at the University of Toronto, we had mentorship facilitators in each one of our divisions. We had a mentorship facilitator. And if there was an issue between the mentor and mentee, for example, the mentorship facilitator could potentially get involved as well, and try and help resolve that. So that's something as well to think about, you know, are there individuals who could get involved to try and help mediate?
Right. And so I want to talk a little bit about a book that you wrote a few years ago called Mentorship in Academic Medicine, which draws upon the existing evidence base on academic mentoring in medicine and the health sciences. So could you talk a little bit about maybe the book or some of the research and work that you've done in this field and what sparked your interest in this area?
So as you know, Sharon, I'm a bit of a geek, and so I will do a systematic review or research on lots of different things, and I mentioned at the beginning of our talk that Dave had, you know, when I finished my training, he basically, you know, we had kind of like an exit interview where we talked about kind of next steps and what I wanted in my career, and that was when he said to me, I want you to do the same thing for others. And so that's kind of what triggered my interest in research, because then I started to panic and I started to think about, well, what does that mean? Like, what is a good mentor? How do we become a good mentor? What does it mean to be a good mentee? And so, so the first piece of work that I did then was did a systematic review of the quantitative literature with some colleagues in Europe. And then subsequently did a systematic review on the qualitative literature on mentorship. So that I could, so again, for totally selfish reasons, I wanted to figure out how do I improve my skills as a mentor and a mentee. And so did that. And then it led to some additional work because then you identify gaps in the literature around like developing the relationship and what a good mentor should do and what a good mentee should do and how do you set up a mentorship program. And so over time then did some qualitative work on that as well. And you know, eventually it did lead to the book that actually Dave, my mentor, and I wrote together. And it was the last thing that we did together actually before he died was writing that book together. And to me it was a really lovely thing to do. I felt very privileged to get to do it. Because I got to again learn more from him, but also because it was a topic that I felt was a really important one that we hadn't maybe done as much in academia as we should have on explicitly recognizing the importance of mentorship, you know, and not just for the mentees, but for the mentors, and also in terms of thinking about how can we support mentees and mentors in the relationship. And so I found it, it was a fun project to work on. It's led to a lot of interesting additional work and thinking about where the gaps are again since it came out. But that's kind of what triggered it is, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, you're thinking about, well, how do I do that? How do I do that in my, you know, and become a mentor and try to figure that out.
Well, I think it's a fantastic resource. And I definitely recommend it for our listeners. And so based on my own experience and those of others, I know that diverse perspectives enrich that mentoring experience. And sort of from my own experience, I've had different types of mentors over the years. I've been lucky to have really great people in my life. And I just want to mention that I had my first female mentor during my postdoc, which for me was a completely different experience. Learned completely new perspectives, even those including things like work-life balance, family, and other factors maybe not related so much to my research and work. And I say this also as a woman because I felt I needed someone that I could relate to on a different level. So I'm just wondering if you can also discuss the importance of diversity and inclusion and you know what we're sort of talking about here in these mentorship relationships.
So great question, and for a number of reasons. First of all, we know that mentorship is important. If you have a mentor, you're more likely to as an academic to be get grants and publications. You're quicker for promotion. You're more likely to stay in your institution. You have better career satisfaction. So we already know the importance of mentorship and the impact that it has. We also know from the literature that certain populations are less likely to be mentored. So for example, we know that there are differences in terms of in some of the early literature in terms of race and gender, and so to me, we have to really be looking at, you know, who doesn't have a mentor. And how do we make sure that everybody has a mentor? Because if we're providing it for some and not for all, then that means we're, you know, there's a large percentage of our population then who's not going to have all of those career outputs that we talked about to the same degree. So I think it's critically important to look, and if we're responsible for mentorship in our institutions or organizations, we should really track who's getting mentored, who's not. How do we make sure that we're addressing those gaps and prioritizing those gaps for people who aren't getting mentored? And then also understanding, are there unique mentorship needs then? So for example, you mentioned, you know, as a woman, you know, you receive different different types of mentorship from women versus men. You know, there's that. There could be, you know, race or people, you know, with different chronic illnesses, for example. You know, there's a lot of different things like that influence and are important factors in the mentee-mentor relationship. And I think, you know, one of the things I found in our some of the research that we did that, you know, sometimes it's one of the reasons why you need more than one mentor, because you might get certain things from one person and not from another. And you know, one of the first things, when going back to when Dave and I first met, you know, he said to me, you know, I can give you advice on, you know, these things, you know, career things and stuff like that. I cannot give you advice on work-life integration, you know. And he said, like, you know, or what it's like to be a woman and a woman academic physician, you know, and if you want to have, you know, family and kids and everything. He said, my experience is very different from your experience. He said, but I can link you up with people who've got that experience. And I think that again highlighted, you know, the importance of having a mentor who recognizes, like, you know, what my limitations are. You know, as a white woman, I don't have an experience of living as a BIPOC individual. And so, you know, if I've got a BIPOC mentee, then I want to make sure that I link them with others who I think, you know, if they want that. And so I think it's really, really important for us to think about mentorship in that way. And make sure that we really are meeting the needs of the mentee, and reflecting on, you know, that they, you know, I come with very different experiences, very different biases than Dave, for example. And so, you know, or somebody or another mentor or whatever. And so it's making sure that we as mentors reflect on that and think about, well, what biases am I bringing to this relationship, and how do I make sure that, you know, the mentee is not going to be negatively impacted by that, and making sure that they get the benefit of other mentors then as well.
Right. And I think that's actually a good segue into my follow-up question, because we at the Canadian Nutrition Society have this wonderful trainee mentorship program that runs the academic year, and it's organized by our trainee leadership committee. And when we're recruiting both mentors and mentees, we do ask questions that can include, you know, which sectors are you interested in? Industry, academia, government? What is your language of preference? Is it French or English? What gender do you prefer? Like, we ask a lot of those questions, and we try our best to match mentors and mentees based on some of those interests and what they feel they would relate to. So for organizations like us or even others, what kind of advice would you give for those looking to establish or improve their mentorship programs?
Well, I think it's great that you've got a program, and it's great that you want to look at kind of how are we doing? Do we need to do anything differently? Because I think those are the most important things. I think if you're initially setting up a mentorship program, I think it's important to do a needs assessment and find out, like, you know, what are the needs of the population that you're responsible for? You know, is it graduate students and fellows? Is it early career people? And what needs do they have? Are they not getting access to mentorship? Are there mentorship breakdown issues? Like, really having a good understanding of what the mentorship needs are. And so doing a needs assessment, and then using that to tailor the development of the program. But then also, once the program's established, like, as you said, like, one of the key things is to evaluate it over time. You know, and I think it's good to do qualitative and quantitative. And, you know, I've mentioned kind of looking at, you know, the metrics, who's getting mentored, who's not, and, you know, the quality of the mentoring they receive. So, you know, are people, so for example, in our academic department, we measure it in a number of different ways. So there is, every 2 years, there's a survey done of our department members, and they get asked about mentorship and the quality of their mentorship. We also, every department member has to fill out an annual activity review or report, and they also have to comment on mentorship. And whether they're going for promotion or whatever, the mentor always has to be involved in that process. And it's an opportunity for them to reflect on kind of their experience with their mentor. So it's, and then in alternate years, when I was responsible for the mentorship program, then we also did interviews. So we would do a survey, and then the next year would do interviews with people. So we could go after in a little bit more depth and detail where the gaps were. So we identified, for example, that we were meeting the needs for mentorship for early career people. Like, we'd focus a lot of efforts on, you know, people in their first 5 years, but then mid-career and senior people were feeling that they didn't have any mentorship. And so then one of the things that we did then was make sure that we thought about mentorship across the career span, that, you know, just because you're mid-career and senior doesn't mean you don't need mentorship anymore. And often, you know, when you're mid-career and senior, those are times when you're thinking about, you know, doing things differently, like in your career, like maybe you're going to take on leadership roles or whatever. And those are important times to have a mentor to talk about those things. So we identified that. The other gap that we identified was we found clinician scientists, so these are clinicians who spend 75% of their time doing research, were much more likely to have mentors than clinician teachers, who are physicians who largely do clinical work. So they do 75% clinical work and 25% everything else, including teaching. And so we found a big difference. And so we then started focusing efforts to make sure that the clinician teachers had access to mentors, and made that, you know, every time we recruit somebody, we make sure that as part of their recruitment, you know, they have a mentor, and their mentor reviews their academic planning document and things like that, so that everybody recognizes the importance of mentorship. And then the other thing that we identified as well is that the mentees wanted ways to recognize their mentors. And so then we set up mentorship awards. And one of the fun things that that I found really kind of interesting and learned a lot is the way that the award was set up is that the mentees nominate a mentor. The mentor then is told they were nominated, and they get asked then to write one or two paragraphs on their approach to mentorship. And that becomes a resource for others. And so it's actually been really lovely, because you get these amazingly powerful stories from the mentees about the impact of the mentors. And then you get these amazing, tips and strategies from the mentors on what it means, like it, but how they became a mentor and what their strategies are. Like, it's actually, you know, been quite fun and interesting to see that. But we wouldn't have thought about doing all those things if we hadn't done the evaluations and hadn't done the surveys and the interviews to really find those things out.
No, I think that's important. And I love that you're talking about the strategies for evaluating and recognizing that this mentorship. I think something for me to take back to our organization as well. And so maybe I'll end with one question for you. And so if you had some advice for individuals seeking to mentor or even looking to become a mentor, what would that be?
I think, first of all, I would say it's a joy and a privilege to be a mentor. I think that, if anybody's thinking about doing it, I would say do it. There's more literature on the impact on mentees than on mentors, but the literature that is out there suggests that for mentors, it keeps mentors interested and stimulated and enthusiastic. So to keep that in mind, I would encourage people to do some reading around, you know, the topic around, you know, what it means to be a good mentor and a good mentee. And also to think about how would you want to structure the relationship. And it's everything from, you know, initially setting up the meetings to what are you going to discuss every time, and, you know, and kind of rules of engagement. So really thinking about the process, I think, to me is really important, in addition to, obviously, you know, is this an individual that I'm going to want to mentor or be the or have as my mentor? It's thinking about how is that gonna work, and also realizing that what works for one mentee and mentor doesn't necessarily work in the same way for somebody else. So it's making sure that you find what works for you. And the other thing I would say is for mentees in particular, it's never ever, you know, hesitate to reach out and ask somebody if they're interested in, you know, and at least exploring the idea of mentorship. You know, it's sitting in, you know, see it from their perspective, that it's a compliment if somebody reaches out and says, you know, will you talk to me and, you know, about potentially being my mentor? Like, that's a compliment, right? And so I think maybe that might help mentees think about, you know, maybe making them feel that it's not an imposition. Cause I think so many mentees say, oh, we feel like we're imposing on the mentors to, you know, to ask them. And, you know, I would say to them, reach out. It's a compliment to them. And if they can't do it, then that's okay. But hopefully they'll suggest other people as well. Because sometimes, you know, we also have to be mindful of, you know, how many mentees can a mentor take on, and to really be an effective mentor, you know, you can't take on too many, because you want to make sure that you have time for the ones, you know, that you have, and being able to give them the best experience that you can. You know, you don't lose anything aside from the time that it takes to reach out and ask.
Right. And you mentioned reading about mentorship, and we did talk about one of the resources earlier, your book on academic mentorship and academic medicine. And so are there any other resources that you could refer to our listeners?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different resources that are out there now as people are kind of developing mentorship programs, and a lot of like professional societies and organizations and other groups have mentorship resources. So I would encourage people to, you know, to reach out to those. The volume of literature on mentorship is really expanding as well. And you know, we're seeing more and more every day. You know, there's another study that comes out. So there is a lot of literature, but there's not a central repository for a lot of that work. On our University of Toronto Department of Medicine website, we've got different toolkits for mentorship and things like an individual checklist and things that people can use for the relationship, and other organizations as well have different mentorship toolkits and things. But I would also encourage people to as they're thinking about the mentor and mentee relationship, and if you're interested in academics, also think about studying mentorship, because I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done in the area as well. To tackle some of the gaps in the literature. And so I would encourage, if anybody's interested, think about it from a research perspective too.
Well, that's very valuable advice. And your perspective on mentorship is truly inspiring. And I will undoubtedly help our listeners on their own mentorship journeys. So I want to thank you so much, Dr. Strauss, for sharing your pearls of wisdom with us today and for having this chat on mentorship with us.
My pleasure and privilege. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Nutrition Conversations. We hope that you found today's discussion informative and inspiring. If you're interested in hearing more about the latest research in nutrition and health, be sure to check out our website at cns-scn.ca/podcast for upcoming episodes. You can find us on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Simply search for the Nutrition Conversations podcast on your favorite app, and you'll have access to all our episodes in one place. We release new episodes at the end of each month, so mark your calendars and stay tuned for upcoming episodes. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode.